Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of The Sportsman. As always, Joey D, as always, Mikey V, and myself, The Big Ticket. We got a lot to get into. We're coming off a great episode with Mark Stone. It seemed to be received well. A lot of people liked the guests. A lot of people liked Mark. A lot of people liked everything going on about the last episode. So we will continue trying to get guests, and we will do that. But until then, back to regular scheduled programming, just the three of us. And let's just dive right into the Masters. And the guy I want to get to first is the man who went to the Masters on Sunday. Joey D, walk us through that.
I'll tell you what, man, this place is like a little slice of heaven, man. It is. It is all that it's advertised to be. And then some. It's special, special spot. We got to do it right. FP and I did it the right way, man. We were able to get our hands on some club, like member passes, like basically got clubhouse access, got access to the trophy where we could see everything. We got access to the member pro shop. We got access to a secret hidden bar behind Amen Corner on hole 13. There's like a hut that's like basically hidden away behind trees and everything. Inside there's TVs, a full bar, a leaderboard. I mean, this is like, it's like waking up and realizing that everything you've ever dreamed of is better than it could be. This place was sensational. You see the course on TV. You see hole 12, hole 16, hole 18, like you see these holes and then you get there and you realize just how much better it is. Like you don't realize the slope coming down near the greens, the bunkers, the undulations on the greens. I mean, it makes this course real. You realize how difficult they make it and how tough it is to play. And it just gives you such an appreciation for what a guy like Scottie Scheffler did on Sunday, man, with the greens being so tough. Everybody else in the field is struggling, you know, playing maybe one or two above par at best, not even. This guy, we watched him bogey on 11. He went down to like, I think it was 7 or 8 under, and he was like a stroke ahead of Åberg and like 2 ahead of Homa. And then he went on to like birdie 4 of 5. The guy went nuclear and it was just never close. It was kind of anticlimactic. Like it was never really it was just like, oh my God, is someone going to make a push? But he, every time Åberg would birdie or someone would make a play, he would just go and birdie again. It was unbelievable. The guy is as dialed in as you could possibly get right now. He is playing with so much confidence. Being there was incredible. I will be honest, for the first half of the day, I didn't watch much golf. You're just soaking it all in. You're walking up and down the course, really taking in the sights. But like towards the end, we watched a bunch. And I tell you what, man, Scottie Scheffler is the real deal. Great Masters. Wish it was a little bit closer. Because, you know, at one point there was like a 4-man tie for the lead, you know, between Homa, Åberg, Morikawa, and Scheffler. And I was like, all right, here we go. This could be fireworks. We could get, something right down to the wire. Maybe it goes into, you know, a playoff. Who knows? But, man, Scottie Scheffler is a good fucking golfer, man.
Mikey, what'd you think?
Joe, what do you think you would shoot at Augusta if you could play there?
Oh, Mikey, it would be. Probably. I talked to some people. They said that, like, a guy who's shooting in the 70s, you know, like pretty scratch, could shoot like 90, depending on how hard the greens are. I'm probably shooting like 120, 130.
Yeah,
probably pretty easily. They actually had a funny thing. I don't know if you guys saw it on social media, that if you could just start on the green,
I saw that.
Putts, yeah.
Would you be able to win the Masters? And I honestly, after seeing how tough those greens are, I don't know if I could. I really don't, because I saw guys making putts that looked like they were going to go in, and then they just keep rolling like another 5 to 10 feet past the hole. And I don't know, but yeah, the course is tough, Mikey. It's insane when you see it firsthand, right, up close. Right. It makes you appreciate it so much more.
Yeah, I think the greens is what separate. You don't see. I haven't been to nearly as many golf courses as you guys have, but the golf courses I've seen, like, you just don't see greens like that are shaped like that, and that have, first of all, that are that fast. They said Saturday, like, it was like glass, like the greens were just like glass, and with that much shape to it, like, you just don't see greens like that. So that is an interesting. I saw the same thing, about starting on the greens. Could you win the Masters? But anyway, all in all, four-way tie at 6 under on Sunday at one point. I thought that, it was going to, I thought Aberg was going to make a run. I thought he had the best shot out of the four guys. He looked the best. Morikawa had a couple chances that were birdie putts that he had to make the front nine, and he missed both of them. And even I think it was Nance, or maybe it wasn't, but somebody said that they were like, those are the putts, like, you just can't miss those putts when you're chasing Scotty. And there was the four-way tie at 6 under. I was like, all right, this is going to be really great. And it wasn't. It was not entertaining, really. It was incredible to watch.
Wasn't, yeah.
Because of just incredible to watch a guy who plays golf like it's a video game at this point. Like, Scheffler's like watching like a guy play a video game golf. This guy just birdies almost every single hole. But in terms of like entertainment, like, no, it wasn't really entertaining, because it was never close after whatever, Joe, the 12th hole. I mean, the back nine was just not close. And, again, hats off to Scotty. The chalk guy keeps doing what he does. And, I just saw his odds what's the next major? PGA Championship?
PGA Championship.
I just saw he's like plus 400 for that already. Like it's just, it's getting to the point where, he's getting those short odds like prime Tiger. And it's like, it's crazy to keep thinking that he can sustain this level of success over and over. But, two Masters in 3 years, all the accolades, one of the youngest guys to, do that. And in such a short amount of time, just wild, man. And you take a look at the guy and it's just like, man, it's just unbelievable. I mean,
he's a gracious winner too.
Yeah, he is. He's a class act, man. Like, that's why you can't really, like, that's why you can't really not like him. You can't not like him. Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, there's some guys who I think, like, they're easy to root against. I just can't see how you root against Scotty, but at the same time, like, I just wish it was like more entertaining to a degree. Like, I really thought once that four-way tie happened, the way that Adberg had been playing, I thought he was going to really make it interesting down the stretch, and they couldn't.
The 11th and 12th hole is what did it. I was sitting right there watching. So first Aberg, whatever, however you pronounce it. He double bogeyed. So he fell 2 strokes back. Then they go to 12. Homa double bogey on 12.
Yeah.
And then I'm watching the next grouping. Morikawa goes in the water on 11 and doubles there. And then Scotty actually bogeyed, but on 12, he birdied. So he basically stayed even, and everybody else went up 2 strokes. And then he went on to birdie 14 and he went to birdie 15. It was just, or he parred 15.
Yeah, that's like, exactly right, Joe. That's exactly right. That was the turning point right there. But in the matter of 20 minutes, The three of the four leaders, Morikawa, Homa, and Oberg, all just threw up on themselves, and they pretty much took them out of contention. After that, it was pretty much only Oberg who had a chance if Scotty made a few mistakes and if Oberg birdied most of the holes, and that didn't happen. He played pretty much par golf, and Scheffler played even better on the back, man. He started to pull away, and he didn't even need to. Yeah, he didn't even need to, and he just – But what I tell you what, the only chance you have of getting him is if he makes a mistake off the drive, because if he gets himself in the middle of the fairway, his irons are so precise. He gets himself, and people like to say, oh, he's not a great putter. He's not a great putter. He doesn't have to be, because his irons get him within 6 feet every single time.
It's well, absurd. He's got a putting coach now.
Yeah, and that's getting good, guy, too.
And he was making on Saturday.
His putting is a lot better.
34.
It's a lot better,
So his putting has gotten drastically
better.
But
it didn't even need to, because of how great his irons are.
Before that, tee to green, the best statistic golfer in all of the PGA. His problem was that he couldn't finish with putts, and now he's making those putts. So it's just like watching him with the lead is kind of like playing ping pong against Bob. Like, you're not going to beat him.
He really like to get a piece of Bob on the ping pong.
Everyone does, and then they have to eat their
all
words.
All he does is return. He returns everything.
I could play that game, the patience game. I don't need to spike.
He's
I don't
a patient
need to beat
player.
Myself.
That's what
fine.
He does.
He's patient, and that's why I say that. Ticket's seen it. Fine. He makes you beat yourself. So, like, he will just continue to get the ball back over again and again and again until eventually you try to go for the winner. You try to be too aggressive, and then you kill yourself. That's like watching Scotty with like a 2-3 stroke lead, because once he got that lead, I was like, this thing is toast, man. There's no chance
he's
going to
make
a mistake.
No,
he's playing with so much confidence that it's like, it's kind of crazy, because normally if you're leading a tournament, you watch other guys, they're like nervous. You know, they get to a tee, you don't know if they're going to make a shot. He's so used to winning now and playing with the lead that it's like, other guys are worried because they know he's not going to screw up.
You know, Oberg, I thought, had the best chance in terms of what they all looked like, the top four guys at that point. I thought he had the best chance at that point. But in the beginning, in the front nine, I thought that Morikawa actually had the chance to put Scotty in a tough spot. And like I said earlier, he just missed those opportunities that he had to capitalize on. And, you know, they were bringing up the fact that his major win was during the COVID year when there was nobody there. And, you know,
well, he's won two majors now. He's won the PGA Championship and he won the British. So of all the three guys who were tied for the lead, you would have thought he had the best chance just from experience and knowing what it takes. And like, Homa's never won a major. And this was Oberg's first major ever. And this kid's going to be unbelievable. He's what?
Yeah.
4 years.
But I'm with Mikey too. Leading into that, the way the players looked, Oberg was playing the best of the three of them who had a chance to stalk down Scotty. And also, I hate to say it, you know, because we love Max and Morikawa, I don't have any relationship with, so I don't care. But, you know, when you look at a leaderboard like that, Morikawa lacks a lot of dog in a man when he gets into positions like
that.
That's
what I'm
saying. And I hate to say it about Homa
too.
To this point, he hasn't had a lot of dog in him. And Oberg was this fresh young guy. I was like, this guy might be too young to even understand the moment. He might be able to
just playing like he had nothing to lose.
Exactly. And he was smiling the whole time. Good for him. He came
I met
third
his caddy the last night at the bar. I was with Scotty Vail, and he was hanging out with a bunch of the caddies, and I met him. And I was just like, man, this kid's going to be special. He's 24 years old. Yeah, he was going from the green to the tee. He was laughing. He was loose. Like, that's exactly what you want to see. If you put money on a guy to win, you want to see a guy look like he's just at his best point. He's not too nervous.
But unfortunately for the rest of the world, that is Scottie Scheffler right now. And he even said it. He goes, you know, honestly, whatever he said, I'm not going to get the quote right, but he said, you know, Master Sunday was not pressure. He goes, pressure for me was on the Korn Ferry Tour, trying to get my card and win my first tournament on the Korn Ferry Tour to qualify for all the, like, that to him was this pressure. And you could see, like, this guy is just so even keeled throughout the entire, he didn't even show any type of real raw emotion up until the very end. And even then, you know, it never looked like he really even broke a sweat.
No,
I mean, dude, so that's really bad news. That's bad news for everybody else, because this guy could just keep going. He could just keep going.
Do you think he could win? Don't focus on the majors, but do you think he could tie Tiger for five Masters wins? He's got two now. which is not, I mean, he's not even halfway home, but I feel like he plays there with so much confidence.
Oh, that's the thing. He loves it there. He loves it there. He's 27 years old. So you figure what? A prime golf. How much prime golf does he have left?
27?
27. So how much prime golf does he have left in reality? 12 years?
At least I'd say 8 solid fucking years.
So let's meet in the middle. Let's say we give him a decade more of prime golf. He's got to win 3 out of 10 years. That's fucking hard.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no and be mainly.
I'm going to say no too, man. Now
he's having this kid, and he even went on the record saying, like, my life and the way I approach it's going to change. He's like, because he's a man of faith.
He does, for all of us.
He's a big Christian guy. And it's, mm-hmm. I think he means it when he says things are going to shift for him.
Oh, they are. And to win another three,
I mean, it's hard enough. But if you're going
to. Well, this guy could afford to like hire like 15 fucking nannies a day.
Right. That's the difference between him and Tiger. Like, Tiger, all due respect, he's had his kids, his marriages. Like, Tiger really, like, where was Tiger's top priority always?
Golf.
I agree with Ticket. I just don't know if Scotty. I don't think Scotty is like that mentality wise. I don't think he is.
Perez into Scotty, and he'd win like fucking
yes. Scotty would probably never lose another everything. Oh, that's so good.
Do you think he can win 2 more in the next 10 years, 12 years?
Can he? Of course he can. Do I think he will? He
definitely can.
I think he'll absolutely. I bet. Good money definitely wins one more.
I
don't know.
Looks to me
two.
So much better than anyone. Yeah. Rory, yes. The odds that Rory gets, and he looked terrible. He looks so bad. It's just like, and then Brooks. Everybody thought maybe Brooks might do something, or like, you know, it's just like, Scotty right now is so dialed in. It's unbelievable.
Golf is a lot like college basketball in that it's a game of runs. A lot of these guys get hot for 2 to 3 years. Yeah. They're the biggest thing on the planet, and then they fall off. And that's why Tiger Woods happens, it's amazing. Right. It's amazing.
I was just going to say, Rom, too. It's like you got these guys, and it's like you think who – I think it's to the audience that watches golf is like – everyone is looking for that next Tiger.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to force that hand on Scottie Scheffler yet. Like, I'm not going to sit here and say he's the next Tiger. Like, I think that's ridiculous.
Three tournaments this year, Mikey.
Yeah, I understand.
The players, which is not a major, but it's the closest thing to it.
It's the closest thing to it. But I would like to see him win another major other than the Masters. We could start there. I would like to see that. But I just don't think it's a necessary pressure. I think it's just fine to say Scotty's the best in the world, and there's a wide margin between number one and number two.
After now, he's starting to putt well now. I don't see a weakness. He drives the ball just as long as anyone. He drives it consistently down the fairway. He hits the fairway, it seems like, all the time. As Ticket mentioned before, he's one of the best iron players in the game. Mm-hmm. Scrambling out of the sand, his short game is like his chipping, he'll be off the green and he'll chip the ball to within 2 feet. And it's like a tap in putt. So he doesn't even need to necessarily putt that well sometimes, because he puts himself in such good positions to birdie on par fives and different holes. It's like, he doesn't even need to be that good of a putter, it seems. And now his putting is getting better too. It's like, I don't see a weakness anywhere in his game. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, congrats to Scotty Scheffler. I'm sure the kid's on his way, so he's going to be enjoying himself there. I think his life's going to change. I don't think he's like Tiger at all. I think he seems pretty dedicated to wanting to be a father and being a family man. So we'll see how that fits into golf.
The kids.
What's this?
Starts dedicating the wins to the kids. We got a problem.
Yeah, and listen, I don't misconstrue our words. I'm not saying that Tiger's not a family oriented guy, or he wasn't a present dad. That's all I'm saying is, it just would seem to me that Tiger was a guy who would prioritize golf a little more than Scheffler may once he has the kids. That's what I would say. Like, just where it stands on the importance totem pole, I think to Scotty's going to be a little bit higher than maybe it was for Tiger, because Tiger was still trying to chase this like GOAT level, which he did achieve. I mean, so you can't take that away from him. That's what he wanted, and that's what he did. A true killer in many ways, just like a Michael Jordan type or a Tom Brady type.
Lady killer, too.
Well, that's a whole nother. That's a whole nother.
But yeah. You're wrong. Yeah. You're wrong.
All right, let's move on here. Did anyone here watch UFC besides myself? UFC 300?
Oh, great card, yes. Man. What are you kidding?
It was unbelievable.
Fight after fight.
It was even the undercard was unbelievable. I went to Bob's, spent the day with him and Jet, his dad, one of his dad's friends. Joe knows him. They went to a UFC fight together in Miami. Stevie. And it was, I got to say, it was one of the greatest nights I've had since moving to Florida. It was unbelievable. Bob's dad's firing in bets. We're eating pizza. Jets getting involved. Jets winning bets. We're all winning. Wow. It was a great time. And again, it was just one of the best cards I've seen in a long time. People were upset that they didn't see the biggest names in UFC, but they had just a stacked card. Just some of the greatest hitters out there from beginning to end, even the undercard. Gentlemen, which fight stood out to you the most? There's obviously one, but did you get much out of the rest of them? What'd you guys think of the whole night, UFC 300?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were saying that the undercard was even better than was lined up better than the main card, the pay-per-view card, which I don't disagree with. Obviously, the Holloway Gaethje fight to me was the highlight, the high point of the evening. Yeah. Incredible. And the whole fight was just, I mean, you want to watch two guys just kill each other. I mean, it was just unbelievable. I'll tell you what fight I really enjoyed too. The Zhang Weili fight. I was impressed. I was impressed with the challenger to Weili.
That won.
I mean, she got choked out. She was out. She was out. The fight should have been called there. And for her to get up and fight in that next round, I gotta tip my cap.
And then she almost got killed the next round. The girl was wailing on her.
Tough chick, man. Tough chick. And then, obviously, the main event, you know, Pereira just, I mean,
unbelievable.
That was the one fight where it kind of felt like this other guy shouldn't even have been in the octagon with him, man. Like, he was just toying with him.
He goes to Herb Dean, who tries to interrupt. He goes, no.
Yeah.
And then
knocks him the fuck out.
Yeah. It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. The way he waved off. It was so sick.
I mean, you had that, and then you had Holloway calling Gaethje to the middle of the octagon and knocking him out, calling him into the middle of the octagon and knocking it. I mean, it was everything as advertised. You know, that's a paper. See, the UFC to me, like, here's the difference between the UFC and boxing. Boxing has lost so much of its luster because of all the subdivisions and how there's no unified title. It's like all the different titles, and there's not one consensus. It should just be one consensus heavyweight champion of the world. That's it. Yeah. Middleweight, whatever, you know, light heavyweight, all of that. It should just be one title, not all these different divisions. That's one problem. The second problem is when you buy a UFC pay-per-view, now granted, some of them could go a little bit quicker, but I do think you get the bang for your buck. I don't mind. Like I would spend that $80 every single week if that was what the entertainment level I was getting. That was unbelievable.
First one I've ever purchased, Mikey, and I watched every second of it. It was so worth it. And by the way, take another fight that didn't really get maybe the recognition it deserved because there were so many good fights was that Rakic Prochaska or whatever fight. And I know you guys had that Jiří Procházka guy. He was getting his legs. He couldn't walk. This guy was kicking the shit out of his legs. He couldn't move. I was like, this fight is done. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so exciting about the UFC, that on a turn of a dime, he clocks this guy with one punch, knees him in the face, and all of a sudden just starts wailing away at him and knocked him out. And it's like, that is what is so fun about the UFC now. And I think me going to UFC 299 is what really turned the tide for me, because I actually sat there, I watched it, I was engaged, and I was like, oh my God, this is pretty nuts. And then my next experience is UFC 300, which I just ordered. I mean, it's hard to imagine after that I can't not just start watching all of these things. But it was fight after fight. There was an early card, Green versus that Miller guy. This guy was beating this Miller to a pulp. His face looked like a beach ball, dude. It was unbelievable. It was just every fight was so exciting. It was the Holloway fight, man. By the way, Holloway no one really gave a chance. The thing was like plus 140 going into the fight, and no one thought he had a chance.
He's a slight dog. I mean, it wasn't like, but, it wasn't but like, I don't think it anybody, wasn't like the Wei Li fight where she's like,
no,
minus
but I don't think, but I don't think anybody,
not
really
many people thought that he was going to win. Yeah.
Right. To knock him out. Right. And for him, for him to do what he did at the end of the fight, when he had legit, like, it was like legitimately he had won the fight. It was like, it was not going to be a contest. Like, he was going to win unanimously. For him to call Gaethje to the middle of the fucking ring and just say, let's go toe to toe. He risked getting knocked out. And it just, it was one of the badass, most badass things I've ever seen.
The Pereira's thing was probably the coolest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. But yeah, that was very cool too. And Max doesn't get enough credit to either for, he went up a class for this. Oh. He used to fight in the class below, and he used to get in these wars with Volkanovski. He lost all three times. A lot of people think he won one of those, but it went to decision. He lost it. Anyway, he comes up here. He fights Justin Gaethje, who's one of the baddest motherfuckers on the whole entire planet. And he gets in a fucking war with him, albeit he poked him in the eyes twice. That was a little low. I'm sure he didn't mean it, but he did. But this guy, Holloway, man, even when he used to fight Volkanovski, he's a tactician. He's a surgeon. He waits for his moment, and he's got the strongest, as one of the strongest jaws out there, man. He can take a hit just as much as Gaethje can. And that, you know what? He ended up staying and Gaethje
in either class.
Fell down with 1 second left. And we had that to end in the fifth round. We thought we were done. And for it to be him to be knocked out in the fifth round,
that's crazy.
1 second left. It was. I mean, that's what you bet for. I mean, that was. Sure. It was one of those feelings that.
Isn't it fun when you have the whole squad on a guy and then
it's so great.
Like Bob's dad gets so into.
He was so into it. He is one of the most fun people to hang out with. By the way,
we were in
him and Stevie 99. Together are great.
Oh yeah, but he was calling the fighters like he was in their corner and he was close enough. That he was yelling them by their first name. Like he was like, come on. Like, and it's just like, he's so into it. When it wins, you can't help but just smile because it's so funny.
Yeah. And then Bo Nickel too, man.
What's this? Pereira gained like 20 pounds in like,
he looked
like
big.
Less, like just over 24 hours. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear that.
Oh dude, I saw that. That was crazy.
And then going back to the Wei Li Zhang thing, did you guys notice too with Yan, the chick that she was fighting, didn't she look like she was 200 pounds bigger than her and like
she's definitely taller than
6 inches taller?
She definitely looked taller, yeah.
They look like two completely different weight classes. It was unbelievable. And for her to, it was just stunning. It was great fights all around. UFC 300 did not disappoint. Joe, did you have one more thing or should we move on?
No, I think we can move on.
Okay.
It was just an awesome, awesome card.
Was. I can assume that you will be going back the next time it's in Miami. That'd be right.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, I think they're fighting next in Brazil. In Rio, I think it is.
Probably.
São Paulo.
That would be a good time.
You'd go to Rio, Mikey?
Yeah. If Dana White's rolling out the red carpet, yeah, I would.
You wouldn't just buy a ticket and fly down with your boys?
No.
All right. That's good to know.
I mean, listen, Brazil's tough place to go, man. Tough place.
Yeah? What do you know about Brazil?
Favela, baby. You don't mess with them.
All right. Let's move on here. I'll leave this one mainly up to Mikey. I don't know a lot about him, mainly because I'm not a Yankees fan, but John Sterling, one of the longtime voices of the Yankees, is retiring. Mikey, why don't you walk us through his legacy and him retire?
I mean, you know, voice of the New York Yankees for almost 40 years. You know, I had the pleasure of meeting him once. He was nothing but a gentleman, very gracious, pictures, talked to me for a decent amount of time at a dinner I was at. Just one of the nicest guys, you know, and his calls are legendary. Some really goofy home run calls. He would make up a home run call for every new Yankee. So I'll always remember that. Some of his iconic calls throughout the years, the World Series wins. So it's just going to be a very big and, you know, different type of adjustment to not being able to listen to him on the radio anymore. But, you know, like everything else, you know, it everything changes and, you know, People grow old, and I mean, the guy's 86 years old, I believe, so it definitely was time for him. You could tell the last couple of years, like, he was good, but
wasn't
you
can
tell for
calls?
A while now. I mean, yeah, he's, like, misjudging home runs, and, like, you know, It's, you know, it's, but he is a legendary guy of baseball. I mean, he's, you know, he's up there with the other.
Is he like your Vin Scully?
Bob Uecker's, Vin Scully. Yeah. Yeah. Harry Carey. Okay. Like, you know, he's up there with those guys in the pantheon, in my opinion, 100%. So yeah, he'll be missed, you know. To be honest, Yankees radio, I used to listen to Yankees radio all the time at work when I was doing different types of shifts, but now that I'm able to be home most nights, you know, I'm a TV guy, but those radio calls were great. And listening to baseball on the radio, that's like the one sport I feel like is baseball where listening on the radio is very much doable. If the play-by-play guy is good enough, baseball is a sport where you can listen on the radio and actually enjoy it. Football, I could never do it. Basketball, too fast paced. Same with hockey. But baseball was always one of those sports where it just felt like on the radio, it kind of like had a little specialness to it. So, yeah, he'll be missed for sure.
That's because the speed of the speed of that
absolutely. Absolutely
allows you to give a lot of secondary commentary and observational, you know, stuff where, you know, when you're calling some of these other sports, like even in football, it's hard to
split second. Things happen split second.
Even it's like sports. It's hard to explain if a guy on the defensive side breaks through to make a tackle, like to get that so quickly, it's very difficult.
You know, football, you're lining up in all these different formations. Guys are going in motion. Defensive guys, you know, the defensive lines are pinching. They're audibling. The secondary's moving from press to zone.
Football is like obviously the hardest.
It's too much. Baseball, Joe's right. You have the setup time. It's a pitch to a batter, and really, it's tough to miss anything. I mean, that doesn't mean it's easy to call it play by play. You got this guy, John Flaherty, who is, an ex-Yankees catcher that does TV play by play sometimes instead of Michael Kay. And I mean, this guy could fuck up a cup of coffee. He cannot. I listened to him call a game. I said, this guy almost ruined the game. I couldn't even watch it. I mean, it was, his calls were just so, so bad. Like, so it's not easy, but at the same time, I'm just saying radio baseball is like a thing. Like I would hope that lasts as long as it can, because I do think it's still very much enjoyable.
And two, you know, by the seventh inning, they run out of things to talk about. They start just kind of cracking jokes or you feel like you kind of get to know the guys too. Like with all those other sports we just mentioned, hockey, basketball, it's moving too quickly. They're just calling the game. They're just voices calling a game. With the baseball guys, I remember too, as a kid listening with my dad sometimes on the radio, and it's like, you kind of got to know them. They felt like you invited them into your living room. Yeah.
It's just an easier game, I feel like, to visualize in your head. Plays are easier to visualize in your head as opposed to football, where it's like, well, where is he on the field? Like when a receiver catches the ball, the play-by-play guy isn't going to call out the exact yard line he's at. So you're wondering, well, where did he make the catch? Like, there's just, like, if a hit is a hit in baseball, you know it's either a home run or a hit. You know what's coming. You kind of get the idea. But, you know, the other sports are a little more difficult.
You can imagine, like, it's a slider outside. Like, you can see it. Like, you can picture it a lot easier.
Hop foul, ball outside, ball in, high and in, you know, you could, all that stuff. It's just, it's just very visually, it's just visually able to be able to see that just listening to someone's call, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. All right. Well, I guess he'll be missed by Yankees fans. Life will go on for myself, for sure.
Yeah. The Yankee fans for sure. That's a big retirement for them.
For me, tomorrow it's just another Wednesday.
That's a brand new guy. That's correct.
All right. Well, let's move on here quickly. We'll just touch on a couple things, and then we'll get into who's a problem. But did you guys see the AI statue that Philadelphia gave this guy?
Oh yeah,
yeah, I did.
It's like this big.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tiny guy.
He wasn't. Yeah, he was small for basketball.
6'1".
Yeah, that's still a nice, he's a tall guy. People thought he was short. People thought he was like 5'11".
Yeah, well, I mean, when you stand next to Shaq, you know, in that NBA finals, like he looked like a fucking ant.
When you stand next to Chris Webber for a couple of years, yeah, you look small.
C-Web, man, I love C-Web. It was
tough because he got so emotional during the speech before, and then they do the unveiling, and it's kind of a bang job. Do you ever see that fake unveiling of the David Beckham statue? That was a Corden, James Corden did, like, on the, like, it was almost like they were pulling a prank on Iverson.
People have been banged by these statues, or the Hall of Fame bust sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Like,
how about the Sean Taylor thing that the Commanders did? How bad that was. It was like
Cristiano Ronaldo's bust. He looks like Frankenstein.
The Sean Taylor thing was like a it looked like a mannequin they pulled from a Macy's storefront and just put a Sean Taylor jersey on it. Like, really embarrassing. Like, really, really bad. So you got to be careful with those statues, man.
Statues are hard to get right, man. Sculpturing
ain't easy, dog.
Dude, it's hard to find a good sculptist.
Where did like Michelangelo and like all these guys
get Patrick Swayze on the line?
We phase him out, man.
Ghost.
Yeah.
But this statue was like this. It looked like a Heisman Trophy. It looked more like a trophy than it did. Like an homage to this one of the greatest players, not in in Sixers history, in Philadelphia history.
The Aloha Trophy is bigger than the Iverson Trophy.
See, that's not terrible though.
Yeah,
it's not great though.
It's not great, but
hair looks like it's painted on.
It's sculpted on.
Yeah. I think that was another one though that got a lot of bad press. Right, the Kobe one got a lot of bad press. I think. Yeah. Yeah, it's tough. Ticket's absolutely right. Like, the world is in need of more sculptures.
I mean, this is one of the all-time best.
Yeah, that is. I mean, that's that looks
tough,
like,
man.
That looks like it came from Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
Why did there need to be so much neck on it? Why did they give him so much neck?
And what's that
eyes look droopy?
Yeah, just a doofus. Just a total doofus. But,
and in real life, he's like one of the most handsome guys going.
About an ugly duckling that turned into a swan, man, because this guy was rough looking when he first debuted debuted for Portugal, man. His teeth were like, all his teeth were like, he looked like a fucking alligator.
Beckham too. He was an
acne too.
Yeah, like, bro. Yeah. He grew. I mean, listen, money does really good things for people, you know. Dick, especially in the veneer world, you know.
Dick would have dreads if he had unlimited funds.
Dreads?
Sure.
Dreadlocks. Sure. He'd have so much hair.
That's because Ticket's cool. Cool guy.
I'm a cool guy.
I legitimately mean that. I'm
you
not
meant
breaking
that.
Chops.
Oh,
yeah,
I
do.
Okay.
No, I do. I think you're like one of those like hip guys, like cool, like knows a lot of things. Like is in
here right now.
That, like, you know,
I do know
hair
a
looks
number
good.
Of things.
Hair looks good.
I mean, it looks all right. Yeah, I mean, but
Beckham doesn't want to take a compliment. Man.
I sure can't. I can't take a single one.
Yeah, because he's humble.
Yeah, I guess so. But Beckham, too, if you watch that David Beckham documentary, which is one of the best documentaries I've seen in a long time. Did you guys watch
Bend
that?
It Like Beckham?
The 3-part documentary on Beckham that came out like
four
months ago. It's a 3-part episode. It's awesome. But anyway, you see him coming into the league.
Oh, you know what? My wife, Holly, wanted to watch
really,
that.
Really good. And
she wanted to watch it, I guess, because the Spice Girls are in it. She wasn't married or is married to the Spice
Girl? He is married
to,
yeah.
She wanted to watch that. I might watch it if it's good. Is it good, Tick? It's really that good?
It's really, really good.
Okay.
It's really excellent. Okay. It's not about the Spice Girls at all, so don't worry about that.
That was my major concern.
Also, Spice World forever, though. There's no shame in it.
Who's your favorite Spice Girl, Tick?
Scary. I like Scary a lot. I was a Scary guy, too.
Really?
I mean, it's hard not to like Posh, but then, you know, we'll
40 Spice?
Posh.
It's hard not to like Posh.
It gets pretty easy after the documentary to not like her. But the whole point of that was Beckham was another one of those guys. He came into the league. You could see that he was he was a good looking kid under there, but he was so young. He was going through that awkward phase.
Guys
grow up and get all this money and just.
Yeah, it's swag.
Dude, do you guys have pictures of your? I know I do. Do you have like those pictures of yourself from like your awkward stage when you were like maybe like 10, 11, 12? Mm-hmm. Bro, they're brutal. They are like those are the pictures you never want the internet to ever get a hold of. Ever.
I'd like to see them of Mikey. I'd like
to.
Were you a tall kid?
Yeah, I was always tall. Yeah, I was always like the tallest kid in the class or second tallest kid. in the class. Yeah.
Well, some kids get these growth spurts. They're like shorter.
And but I mean, like, I had like, you know, I had the braces. I had like the big, like turtle rimmed glasses. Like, you got to remember in like the early 90s, like there was no such thing as swag yet, really. Like, you there see was, what? But like for Riz? Adults, not for kids. Like, kids were just dressed up. Like, there was no. Is that you, Joe? See, that's not a bad picture.
Nah, we need to go younger. We need to go.
Yeah, like Joe 16, shows man? A picture of him as a stud in like high school. Like,
oh, I was in like grade. I was like in grade 7 there. Not even.
That's 7th grade.
Probably. Yeah, I was like 14 wow. years old, 12, 13 years old.
The only person who would have this picture of me would be my mom. That's it.
We got to get her on the line. I got to see those. Sure. I'll find mine too. I'm, you know, whatever. I still had the baby fat. Like, I lost that around 13.
Yeah, baby so fat for
if
sure.
You find me at 12, sure. rough time.
Yeah.
Really rough
me.
Time.
I'm telling you, that's me. Seventh grade, eighth grade, like right around there. Seventh grade, probably really bad. Sixth, seventh grade. Really bad.
And then the glow up started in high school. Then you started to dominate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's when he got huge.
That's when he got.
No, I really didn't get like big, like, I mean, I was big in high school, but I wasn't like, there's a difference between being big, like sports big, and then being big, like workout big. I wasn't like where I was just big. Like, I was lifting heavier weights. I weighed so much because of football. I was weighing like 290, 295, which
Jesus
is not
Christ.
A good weight.
Were you bulking with me. Eating though? Or were you bulking in the weight room?
Both, really, but like okay. I wasn't doing like ultra conditioning workouts or anything.
You had a gut, right? Because you were
for sure,
up. Right?
For sure,
yeah
for sure.
Sure, sure. I have
to find some of these old.
Sure.
All right. Well, while you keep looking, we'll move on here to. Well, actually, before we move on to who's a problem, let's promote what's happening next week. If you boys still want to do this, this seems like a tall task for Joe and myself, but I'm sure Mikey will breeze by it. Potentially doing a mock draft next week.
Oh yeah,
for
yeah,
our teams. You would like to do
fun,
that,
man. Okay. Yeah, I would love to do that. Sure.
And how many?
I mean,
rounds
the Bears only
do?
Have, I think, 4 picks or 5 picks, so it's gonna be.
I mean,
easy
I just don't know many guys past the second round. I mean, like, I gotta.
Yeah,
do a lot
no,
of
no, I don't think we should do that. I think we should mock the first round or the first 10
for sure.
of the first round.
Oh,
that's
you mean
I
all
mean.
The? Maybe all
we,
the teams. Like...
We can't go into the second, third. I mean,
okay.
we can, but
I
that's
like that.
Really
Let's...
the listeners aren't gonna know, like, and that's no fault because I mean I don't know guys past really this.
I
mean, I'm not
be good. There's 3 of us. We do the top 15 picks.
Sure.
And we do it like, so we could even.
Why don't we just do the whole first round, Joe? I think we might as well at that point just do the whole first round.
That's fine. Well, and we'll just alternate. We'll go. Somebody gets the 1, 2, 3, and then it just repeats.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, Tick?
I agree. Yeah. And then maybe we can start trading picks. Maybe we can start getting fun with it. Just start trading, swapping picks.
Wait, are we doing it like what we would do? Or are we doing
it
like
what we think is
going to
happen?
What the team should do.
What the team should do.
Okay.
That's complex. That's a lot of work.
I think we come together as a team here. I think we
think it may be fun. I think it may be fun if we did like a mock draft, if we were the only 3 organizations in football and we just mocked the top 30 players and see who came up
but
with
then
the
it depends what
team.
Our roster looks like and what our
true,
needs are
true
that's
too really
tough
deep.
That's too tough. Yeah,
well, regardless, we will be doing some form of a mock draft next week, probably the entire first round. We'll figure out the details on the rest, but come back for that.
I
one
I can't believe the draft is next Thursday, man. Unbelievable.
Are you excited, Mikey?
Oh man,
best time of the year
one
for
of
Mikey.
My favorite night of the year, bro. I can't stop listening to Mel Kiper. I'm a,
those bits you're doing are hilarious, by the way. I like every single one of them.
If I could, like, they ask that question, like, you could have dinner with like 5 people or like Mel. I always forget about Mel Kiper, and I just find him so wildly entertaining. I just
do the rest of the year.
He researches the draft. That's why I appreciate it, because he is a sick fuck. He is a sick fuck. And like, wouldn't you love to be at dinner and just listen to Mel Kiper like break down a salad, like just talk about the salad in his voice? And like, just in the back of my head, I would just be thinking of that music, the primetime music in the back of my head, listening to him talk about a fucking crouton. Yeah.
Don't forget the egg in that.
I would tell you about this crouton, extra crunchy crouton made in house, of course. I mean, he's just so fucking entertaining to me, man. I don't know what
he
it is.
Been doing it for
forever, since I was a kid.
I think
since
the 90s.
I was a little kid.
Yeah. It started in like the 90s.
I do miss Todd McShay. I don't know what happened to Todd.
What happened to
McShay?
Todd.
Now that's what I miss is the banter between them two, because I mean Mel used to get very Mel was like the old goat, and this new like young buck came into town, and Mel kind of wanted nothing to do with it.
I kind of feel like Mel had a talk with the higher ups at ESPN.
He very well may have.
But the fact that he
monopolized the draft.
Yes, he did. But the fact that he didn't, you know, that would be perfect for a Fox to scoop up.
Oh.
He's nowhere. He doesn't even have a podcast, this Todd McShay. I think he's really working at Walmart. I don't know where he is.
Really? I gotta look into Todd McShay. What did he just fall? It's like he fell off the face of the earth.
I haven't seen him in 5 years.
He's gotta have a podcast.
COVID
he's
hit him to. Hard, man. I haven't
is
seen him.
Is that what it was?
Before.
The vid?
I don't know. I don't know. It's been 2019 was the last time I remember seeing
him.
But
anyway, Mel is still going very strong. You know, the hair obviously has lost a little volume, but still is Mel Kiper, man. And you know. The thing about the draft is, like, you have so many of these guys who are paid professionals to mock these drafts out. But at the end of the day, like, so many of them don't even come close to what these teams do. Like, there's the obvious ones. Like, I think it's fairly obvious, 99.99%, that the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams, number one. But honestly, after that, it does feel like anything could happen. I don't know who the Commanders will go with it to. If I had to put money on it and you put a gun to my head, I would say it would be Jaden Daniels. But the talk about J.J. McCarthy and all that stuff, no, I don't think they'll go Drake May. Joe, I know, but man, oh man, are they pumping J.J. McCarthy. The NFL is pumping J.J. McCarthy.
So you see the Vikings are going to be gunning for J.J.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Every day, it's like one of these new teams is just like, it's J.J. McCarthy, J.J. McCarthy.
I do think there's going to be a fair amount of trading going on. I think
this draft is going to be awesome. It's going to be awesome.
It will be a good one.
It's going to be one of the best ones in a long time, because there's a lot of top-tier talent, and there's just so many teams in need of quarterbacks, and it's going to be fun, man.
And there's just so many wide receivers. There's so many teams out there that need wide receiver.
And you got three of the best. I mean, those three, if they weren't in a class together, those three would be the wide receiver one off the board in any other draft, if they weren't going together. Like, Neighbors and Adunze would go one. If they weren't in a draft with Marvin Harris.
A lot of people still think that Neighbors is going to go over Harris. I'm saying what the people are saying.
No,
Joe.
He's right, Joe. There's been people driving that narrative. But again, anything that you've heard in the last month or so is so much smoke behind it. All these rumors and stuff. Like, it's just like these teams, they put out certain like clippings, and they put out certain like little rumors and little, you know, misquotes, and all of a sudden then this guy's picking up steam, and this guy's better than this guy, and this guy should go higher than that guy.
They do this every year with everybody. They do it every single year with anybody and everybody. And my theory on that is, for 4 months, they can't come out and say the same thing over and over again. So I think they create these storylines just so they can keep having their show on TV. Because
there's
a lot of overthinking
going on.
I think there's too much time. They have too much time on their hands to think about the draft when you don't need that much time. So they need to come up with hot takes. And that's how Stephen A. gets paid. So anyway, look out for our mock draft next week. But moving on, let's go to who's a problem and who wants to start this week. Joe, you ready?
Yeah, sure. I'll start.
All right.
My who's a problem, I went back and forth with it. I'm going to go with Alex Pereira of the UFC. This guy, within 2.5 years, has dominated. To every portion. He is just an absolute animal. He is not going anywhere soon. He is an absolute beast. By the way, this is what I was showing you. So he had to make weight for the fight. This is how much he weighed on Friday, 205 pounds. The following day, 232 pounds. I don't know how that's physically possible.
Neither do I.
And by the way,
water weight too.
Yeah. You want to talk about just the most terrifying walkout. When this guy walks out to that like native Portuguese, like Brazilian song that comes out, and then he stands right after getting like touched up, looks at the guy in the ring and does the fucking bow and arrow and just starts screaming. It is horrible. I had chills watching that. I was like, good God, this guy's going to kill
himself on the couch.
I really was.
These dudes are nuts, bro. They're certifiably crazy
to go in there knowing what goes on in there.
These guys' wives leading up to these fights when they're in training for a fight must fucking hate these guys. The mentality that they need to get into to go and kill another guy, basically. I mean, it must be nuts. I don't know how you have a smile on your face about it for the 6 weeks prior that you're training intensely. But also, when he came in, Joe, like you said, 2 years ago, he was like a kickboxing world champion.
Yeah.
This guy was already nuts in that world. He dominated that. And everyone was really high on him when he came in, but I don't think anyone expected this kind of dominance from him this quickly.
He's going to dominate for a long time.
I agree. I
was thinking about doing Scotty as my problem or even Holloway, but Pereira is just, this guy's built like, I mean, if you think of the prototypical fighter, what they should look like, you envision this guy, like no body hair, fucking head to toe, just bulging, shredded muscles. This guy doesn't have an ounce of body fat. Like, he would literally kill the average human being. Like, it's ridiculous. Like, I try to envision, like, how long would it take for him to kill me? Like, literally, over under is 10 seconds.
I think it's five seconds.
I think I might be able to run away from him for a few seconds.
Oh, you're running? Oh, yeah. Okay.
Like in the ring, like
in the octagon, he ain't gonna be able to run far, dog.
No, dude, he just pulled me down.
That's a scary thing. He would just tap you. I don't even think he would knock you out. I think he would just tap you out like a gentleman. I don't think he wouldn't. I think he would try to run. He'd catch you from behind and put you in like a chokehold or something, and you just tap out. I would just tap out. I would just start tapping. As soon as he touched me, I'd tap. I would just tap.
I'd go into the ring like, yeah, I'd just start tapping on the ground.
Yeah, bro. These guys.
I'd surrender.
I wouldn't even be there. I'd be in Cambodia. I wouldn't even be in the country. I don't even know if I could,
I think I would do the same with Wei Li or any of the chicks.
Anyone in the UFC, they're all killing you. Even the worst.
Could you take Jake Paul in the UFC octagon?
Yeah, for sure.
You're fucking crazy, man.
By the way, he was at the Masters on Sunday.
Of course he was. Did you say hi?
I didn't see him. He was rocking a nice little piece on the wrist, too, apparently.
Really?
It's a nice piece. Yeah.
Because every jackass in the world is going to pay to see him fucking fight the carcass of Mike Tyson.
And so will you.
I'm a Netflix subscriber. I don't have to
order. Is it on Netflix?
Yeah, it's on Netflix, yeah.
Oh.
But they're doing the pay-per-view route, aren't they?
I don't know about that. I don't know if they have... I don't know. I've never paid for anything within Netflix.
Me neither. But they've never done this before either.
No, they haven't. So it's possible, but I don't know if that's the case.
Because it's like ESPN Plus. You might already be a subscriber, but you still have to buy the pay-per-view.
Yes. But ESPN Plus is a lot different. Like ESPN Plus is going
to Yeah, but it's also not just ESPN's decision. It's the UFC. Like the UFC makes money off pay-per-views too.
True.
I would think that there would be, but what do I know? Anyway, moving on. Mikey, who's your problem this week?
My problem, listen, I could go with any of several golfers from the Masters in a bad way. Spieth, I was thinking about maybe Thomas, Zach Johnson, and I sold him on the Brilliantly Dumb show, but man, oh man, I'm just going to double down and just say that this guy's a problem. to tell the crowd to fuck off, like, again... Again, like, I'm sure he was getting heckled. I'm sure. And I understand that that's not exactly appropriate at Augusta. I understand that as well. But, like, the bottom line is that this guy just, he stinks. He stinks. That's the first and foremost problem.
He's won a Masters.
He has. And good for him. And that's something I'll never accomplish that. And I recognize that. But... The issue I have, and I said on the Brilliantly Dumb show, is the fact that he doubled down and said that it wasn't directed at the crowd, which is such an obvious lie. Like, just stand on what you did. Just embrace the full villain role. Don't try and tiptoe backwards out of it. You did it. You said it. It's over. It's done. and just stand on it. Like, don't do that. And that, I just thought that that was
such an acting job, him pretending to not.
It was such a chicken shit move, man. That's the best way to describe it. That's a chicken shit move. Just own it, man. Just own it. But I got to tell you, I'm tired of all those guys. Spieth. I'm tired of Justin Thomas. I'm sick of that entire. They stink.
They do.
They stink.
You know what? You can throw Rory in there too, man. I'm sick of him too. Yeah, I'm absolutely.
Bro, like, I'm sick of these golfers.
The rumors that he might be going to live, and then he's like denying
$850 million.
He said there's no chance that he'll never go.
That's fine. But here's what I'll say. I'm getting very sick and tired of seeing these same, and Ticket, I think Ticket said it earlier in the show, these big name golfers who established these huge marquee names years ago. When I say years ago, I don't mean in the distant past, somewhat recent past, establish these names. And these guys are the odds on betting favorites every tournament. And what do? They don't even finish top five, top 10. They stink. That whole crew stinks. Stop making videos and doing all this shit. But you know what? These guys are laughing in the bank, and I don't know golf well enough to really rip into them. But my God, man, like, it's just getting tired. It's getting boring with that crew. I feel like they're like a little crew, and it's just very, very like, it's
That was the problem with the Ryder Cup, is that the whole crew made it. And the person who was to blame was Zach Johnson for bringing on Justin Thomas. He was staying with him, and he's friends with him. It's not like there's no one in the world who doesn't know that they're close. So it's not like anyone was not aware of that. And for him to not pick Keegan was just, tough.
Keegan deserved it.
He was crushed. And by the way, the way Netflix fucked Keegan over.
Yeah.
If you watch that episode he thought he was getting called to let him know that he was making it, and they have the fucking crew there. And then they break it to him that he's not.
And it's a shame because he earned it too. It's like he so clearly earned it and was so clearly fucked that made it 10 times worse. It wasn't like on the edge. There was no decision. He clearly earned it over Justin. So
Mikey's point too in life, when you make decisions, when you make the wrong decisions, you know, there's consequences for your actions. I'm not saying that the fans should be heckling him, but he so clearly made the decisions that benefited him rather than what benefited the well-being of the team.
It's nepotism.
And it's, you know what, for him to expect not to hear anything from it, it's kind of coward.
Sure. Yeah, I completely agree.
It's a turnoff for someone who doesn't and hasn't watched golf as long as, or hasn't been as deep, because I've been watching golf for a long time, but only specific tournaments, but like not as engrossed in the sport as much, like to see them kind of like running around like they remind me of like a high school group of girls, kind of like just like very clicky. And I don't know if that's the actual reality of it, but it certainly seems like it. And I just don't know why they're so braggadocious when they've quite frankly not accomplished much lately.
Well, Spieth and Thomas are certainly very, very close. Yes. They're like best friends.
Right.
Spieth, it's the same thing too. And they get these reputations they don't deserve because they're very, very good for 2 years. And then they fall off, just like most golfers do, because you're not Tiger Woods. You're not Phil Mickelson. Most people do fall off. You have two really good years, and then you just make some decent money in the middle of the pack for the next 10 to 15. But some of these guys, Rory is maybe a little bit, he's a lot better than them, but he still hasn't delivered in a long time either. But these guys, him and Spieth, get these reputations that just follow them for the rest of their lives, because the PGA Tour so badly needs that narrative out there, and they so badly hope that they fill those shoes that they've made for them they need it for the sport.
That's right. That's what I said earlier. They're chasing the next Tiger Woods because they want that so badly for their ratings and for their... Like, that's why they keep putting Rory out there in the front. Like, Rory's this... Like, no, it's fucking not Rory. It's Scotty
Scheffler. Bet against him, man. Yeah. Bet against him. Especially the Masters. He's terrible. He's terrible.
Yeah.
By the way, you know who's joining that crew pretty quickly? And he had a good last tournament. But aside from that, he's been awful. Is Morikawa.
Oh, yeah.
Morikawa has, since he came on the scene and looked like he was going to be a prodigy, he's really... kind of fallen off.
Well, welcome to my problem. That's my problem this week. My problem is Colin Morikawa. This guy has been yanking my goddamn chain for too long now, man. Too many times I'll live bet this guy on Sunday, and or I will have put money on him to win or a top 10 finish before this tournament even starts. And this guy has been banging me and banging me and banging me. And it's, again, it's this whole thing about the reputation thing. They wanted Colin to be this next guy. He was a great story out of Los Angeles, the way he came up. The pride of Chevy Chase Country Club, Colin Morikawa, and he's just fallen short every single time. And even when he puts himself in a position to win, he doesn't have anywhere near the sense of a dog in him. This guy always, he needs a commanding lead on Sunday to win anything, because he has no, there's just nothing in his bones that is willing him. There's no Michael Jordan in him. He just doesn't have that killer instinct whatsoever. And enough is enough with this guy. I'm sick. And then, of course, on 18, but when he has a putt to stay tied for third, which is the difference between probably $500,000 for him.
Oh, you made it, yeah.
Of course, then he makes the putt when he needs to, this fucking guy. But he couldn't make any of the first five out of six when he needed to on the first seven holes. I mean, it was unbelievable how this guy just...
I saw him... He looked like a child standing next to Scottie Scheffler. He looked like a golf man, like a man standing next to like an amateur, like a child. It was crazy.
Yeah. And you know what the moral of that story is? Maybe I'm the problem. Maybe I should stop playing money.
Yeah, sometimes you bang your head over a fucking... Yeah. You know, over a rock so many times, it's going to burst.
But Mikey's right. They put these guys at the top of the odds every single time.
Yeah,
and
that's
it's not
issue.
These guys.
No, it's
that's
not.
That's why picking guys, like, I would start betting on this Åberg or Åberg.
Yeah.
He's for a young guy. He looks like he's not scared of anything.
He looks like he's getting ready for a run.
He does.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on here, viewer questions. Make sure you guys like, comment, subscribe to the podcast and to the Instagram. Fire your questions in over there, and Mr. Anderson will send them to us and we'll answer them at the end of each episode. So the first question comes from Ian Baines. What are your guys' favorite video game of all time?
Oh, favorite video game of all time.
You a gamer, Mikey?
I put in a lot of hours on Modern Warfare 2. A lot of hours, bro.
Yeah. I'm gonna roll it back. Old school. Super Mario, Super Nintendo, NES. That was to me like the epitome of a good video game. I can't imagine that'll ever be topped.
Mario Party. That's fun for the whole family.
Super Smash Bros.
Super
Mario
Smash
Kart.
Brothers.
Mario Kart was awesome.
Yeah.
I love James Bond, GoldenEye.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, GoldenEye. Yeah, that was the one. But then there was also Nightfire. Nightfire was pretty good, too. But yeah, GoldenEye was the one. You guys ever play a game called Crash Bandicoot?
Of course. Yeah. It's a great game.
Those were fun.
Yeah, I was a big Sonic the Hedgehog guy, Twisted Metal. I was a big
Banjo-Kazooie was like Crash Bandicoot.
Banjo-Kazooie.
That was Crash Bandicoot's... you know,
like Nemesis,
that was like the fight between
play,
poor man's
Red
Bandicoot
Auto, like, or like Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah, GTA. Sure.
Those games were awesome.
Yeah, or
NBA Jam. NBA Jam.
I'm listing a bunch of good games now, but Ticket, what's yours?
Favorite of all time? Pick one.
Yeah, pick one.
I'll probably go with, just because I had so much fun playing it with friends. You could involve drinking. You could do it with your family. It was just a game that crossed everything. It was so much fun. You could play with little kids. You could play with adults. It was just probably Mario Party 3 was probably the best one. Mario Party was just such a fun. So many different ways you could do it. You could bet on players. It was a lot of fun. I liked it a lot. Joe, what's yours? Pick one.
Oh, I said, I think Super Mario Brothers.
That's the one? Okay.
The original. Mikey, what was yours?
Probably Modern Warfare 2, the first one, like that first one that came
after
out.
After that, it just kind of went downhill, bro.
Yeah, I was a big Metal Gear guy, too. Love Metal Gear Solid was great. But I would go with Modern Warfare.
Love that's a good one. And the one before that, World at War.
Yeah, that was great.
That was right before it. It was that was zombies. That was the then I'm Nazi talking
about
zombies.
Then the one I'm talking about is Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, not Modern Warfare 2.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about the original Modern Warfare.
The one that debuted cool. Nazi zombies.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I don't think there were zombies in that one.
Oh, no, that was the old one, the war.
Like yeah, something at war, called the war.
World at War, I think.
It was World at War, right? Yeah.
No,
and then Modern Warfare 2 was the next one. That was 5.
Yeah, I'm talking about 4. Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare. The original Modern Warfare, there was no Nazis.
I think that was 3.
The Nazis came out afterwards.
Is that the one where you're in the airport? There's the airport
No,
map.
That's Modern Warfare 2.
That was after.
That one was sick.
One was sick. That was great.
That one was sick. Or they had like the nuke town. Where you're like in the middle of like...
This is the game that I'm talking about right there. That's the game I'm talking
about.
That's
the original, the OG.
That's
game, 3, I think. Yeah.
No, 4, Tick.
4.
Is it 4?
Yeah,
I thought
4.
World at War was 4. Oh, anyway,
that was the
okay,
one
you're
in. Like,
the amount of hours logged on that game was...
Did you put the headset on? You're talking to your friends.
We had a top 25 clan in the entire world. Search and destroy. I'm telling you right now.
The lot less clans.
There definitely was. Like we could
Search
never
and destroy
run
is the one you have to find the flag.
The bomb. The bomb.
Hardest.
Yeah.
But that was the best one because like kids weren't just running around and like doing stupid shit. You had to really like.
What's the one where there was like double the players where there was like it was just a free for all?
Isn't that just that's I forget the name of it, but I know exactly.
You go in there and it was like twice the players.
Yes.
So like
yes.
50 guys.
Yes. Yes.
And it was just mayhem.
Yes. Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. I just can't
capture the
anymore.
Flag kind of stunk because people were just running around.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There was less technique.
In Search and Destroy, if you got killed, you were out for the entire round. You could
watch.
All you had to do was watch.
You'd be stealthy.
And your comms got cut off from people that were playing in the game. You could only talk to your dead teammates. You couldn't talk to anyone who was alive.
Really? I don't remember that. So when you start the game, you're talking to nobody.
When you start the game, you're talking to the whole team, whole team. But when somebody gets picked off, you can't talk to them anymore until you die.
Oh.
It was really sick. It was really good.
So fun, man. Those were the days coming back from I was in school. I'd come back from school. It's like 3:30. I slipped the headset
the
on.
The maps on this are sick.
Oh, maps are great.
The crash, the one where there's the helicopter crash.
Good old days.
Sick, man.
And then they come out with the map extension, like the map packages that you could buy more.
Yeah, they start. That's when it all spiraled out of control, in my opinion, when they started doing that bullshit where you could buy all the extra stuff and like they made it too complicated. There's too much going on now. It was so simple. That game was
Ground
very
War is what it's called.
Ground War. Yep.
Mm.
Yep.
So you could do 32 going head to head.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That's where you had to get your kills up to get your different camos and all the different gun attachments and stuff. Sick.
That's right. Sick. Did you play video? When did you stop playing video games? Was it when you had a kid or was it when
I have a PS5? I got a PS5.
But when did you
I've been
stop?
Trying to play. Like really stop playing?
You met Holly?
Yeah. I would say I was playing when I first met her, and then I guess just like eventually it just kind of phased out a little bit. But I'm looking to run FIFA. Looking to run some FIFA with Bob, ready to smoke his ass
this
on that fucking
doing,
Twitch shit.
This guy's doing
bro, nothing. I just saw he posted like 5 stories about Twitch.
Yeah, he's doing nothing.
Yeah,
we're video
getting
games.
Twitch streams now.
Joe got him a PS5, and it might have been the worst gift you possibly could have given this guy.
It's
all he does.
Watch, he's going to start streaming. He's going to make more money than he's ever given. It'll be the gift that keeps on giving.
But it's not for us. I mean, I don't see him unless I go over there and play him in FIFA.
Hey, listen, he's getting ready for that Twitch stream.
Yeah.
He wants to get sketch on a stream.
Of course he does. Yeah.
You used to complain about the 6:30 dinners. There are no dinners now. There's just Postmates and FIFA. That's all there is. They can't even get
if
them.
You like Grimaldi's delivered to the house, then you're in store.
Yeah, that's what it
then
is.
You're really in luck.
I know. We're losing him, but he's you're right. He's going to make
we're
even
losing
more money.
One video game at a time, Tick. Hey, you know what happens if you can't beat them? Join them. I just stepped for Twitch today.
I missed my birthday. I'd like a PS5 if someone's trying to throw one my way, and then I'll join in there.
I got a PS4 if you want one.
No, I'll take a PS5. Thanks, brother.
I don't even know how the Twitch works. I don't even know how it works.
To be honest, the Twitch doesn't work as well for the sports games, unfortunately. Like, you really should be playing, if you want to make the big, big bucks, you got to be playing that, what do they put, Fortnite or, I don't know what the big game is. The one that Daltouche plays. I don't know what that one's called. Okay. But it,
I feel like
Madden doesn't do well.
On FIFA, we could still do well. Like, I almost thought about doing a challenge to see how many hours would it take us to go from starting the game as a co-op, like custom season, to getting to like Division One. Like, how long would that take us together?
Probably a I'm long saying time. Though, how do you do the Twitch aspect of it? I don't even know how. What
you
is that?
Set up a stream.
Just stream. It's like live streaming. It's like if you
so
go
you gotta
live,
have a camera on the on correct. The TV.
Yeah, it works better for people on PC, but you can do it the way Bob's probably doing it. People do it. But yeah, the 10 grand a day kind of shit, that's those other games. But you can, yeah, you're right. You can still make a lot of money playing FIFA too, I'm sure. People just want to watch you guys. All right, next question.
Twitch, this guy's never going to leave his fucking living room.
10 grand a day?
Those big guys do. Yeah, dude, they're millions. They're millions.
That's everything wrong with this country in a nutshell, man.
Mikey, no. Some would say no. The only subs is a sort of, that's like, they're a side of, kind of the same thing. You're making money on, you know, it's
the, what?
They're just you're providing a service, but
I'm
so
providing
are,
a, what service so are they providing? They're playing video
entertainment,
games.
Entertainment, Mikey.
Man, oh man.
Oh, but, Mikey, you can't.
I don't know. I don't know, man. I guess. But what are they going to do? Like, that's what they're going to do for a living is play video
10 grand a day. They don't got to do much, Mikey.
No, yeah, I guess not. How are they going to be prepared to be ready for society? I guess that's my question. Like, how are you going to be prepared to communicate with other human beings when you play video games all day long?
They got $10 million in the bank. They're going to be our – they'll figure it out. Man, I agree with you. We have
really, really – really, really fallen far from grace.
What another question?
We really have.
I know. I'm trying to get there. Next question comes from Colin Underwood. It's not really a question, but I'll turn it into one. It says, we need a weekly Bear Down Dad Tips segment at the end of the show. So the question I would propose to you is, do you have a weekly tip as a father?
Yeah, sure. Here's this week's tip. You know, don't argue with your kids. No matter what, you're going to lose. So I would say if your toddler is talking back to you, I would just say to just give up. I would just give up and just say, all right, yeah, fine. And just let it go. Because arguing with these people is like, you might as well just be talking to a fucking stack of bricks. You might as well be talking to a stack of bricks. My daughter has the
teach discipline, Michael.
Okay. He called his kids these people.
That's
man.
What people that who don't have kids will tell you, that you need to teach discipline. Discipline to what point, Joe? What am I going to smack my kid? That ain't going to happen anymore. This ain't, you know, when we were growing up getting
smacked.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
And I deserved every smack.
One
I
of
got.
These kids goes to school and tells them that daddy or mommy hit him. That's the end of the line. It's the end of the line for you. They'll bring the fucking CIA out to come and investigate.
I never got hit.
No, never.
I kind of think that might be more of an Italian thing. You guys are Italian. I think that might be more of a you guys.
But anyway, yeah, no, that would be my tip. Yeah. Is just to take you know, just take it with a grain of salt, because here's
why. Verbally abused.
Their moods change so frequently that the arguing back and forth isn't worth your time, because in an hour. It's just going to, their mood will be completely
what
changed.
What if Dom starts screaming that he wants a toy when you're in the store?
Yeah, that's annoying. Toy? It's annoying. No.
But you don't I'm not saying.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, if you're at home and, like, you're asking them to do something and they're like, no. And then you're like, oh, yes. And then they're like, no. And it's a back and forth. It just, you'll see, it'll come to a point. Just don't drive yourself crazy is all I'm saying. Do not try and get your kid at the toddler age to say yes to everything. That's just not the natural way of life, and it's never ever going to happen.
But you got to pick your battle. I mean, you do got to fight them.
Pick your battles. Public is a big thing. Being out in public, like Joe just said, that's a big thing. Like, that's a no-no. Like, not in public. That ain't gonna, in the house, like, it's different. Like, again, you know, they don't know really what no or yes, like, they don't have that kind of a comprehensive mind yet. So again, pick your spots.
That so if you're if you're at the local Kmart or Target,
sure,
and he wants a toy,
yeah,
he's throwing a fit. Like, do you just
yeah?
Do
what do you do
you then? Just have to?
You got it. Well, me, I'll grab him. I'll throw him in the cart or something like that, and just be like, "Listen, dude, that's it." And like, if he keeps going, I'll just let him go for a little while. You know, I'll let him go. There's only so much you could really do. Like, if you're in there and you really got to stay in there because you got to get something. It depends. Like, are you really in there because you need to get stuff, or are you in there just to fucking, you know, shop around? If I'm just in there to shop around, I'll fucking leave. If I'm there because I got to get stuff, he's going to have to wait and he's going to have to cry a little bit. I mean, it is what it is. Yo, being a toddler's tough, man. Like they got it great. The kids are spoiled. They're, you know, they're well taken care of, but like, it is emotionally taxing, I would say, for them, because they don't know what's going on. Like, they're just, they're so new to everything. Is so, just imagine everything in the whole world being brand new to you. How do you really, you know, we don't remember that as kids. We don't remember that.
No, we don't.
Yeah, it's true. We will make this a weekly segment. I think this should be a weekly thing. I like that. Was informative, and I got no kids. Moving on to Zach Pugh. What is your favorite dish that your mom makes or made?
Not a single sports related question.
They almost never are.
You're right. That's okay. It is. It's fine. My mom's favorite dish that she makes, chicken cacciatore, which is like a Italian style sauce. It's different types. It's like a red sauce with mushrooms, peppers. It's like a heavy red sauce, and it takes a long time to make it. And it's like chicken on the bone, which takes a long time to cook, as opposed to, you know, just cooking like a chicken breast. So that takes like a full day to make. So she very rarely makes it. So when she does, that's my favorite. That hits.
Sounds special.
Joey D.
My mom makes a lot of good stuff. I'm trying to see what is the best thing that she makes. She does. I'll say her Thanksgiving meal that she does is unbelievable, between the turkey and then her gravy and mashed potatoes. I'll go with mashed potatoes and gravy. The Thanksgiving meal that she makes, it's as good as you can imagine. Like, I'll just take that whole meal, and between the stuffing, the mashed potatoes, turkey's always perfect. Like, that just, it, like, when my mom does a Thanksgiving dinner, I imagine that's what every American should have, a Thanksgiving dinner. Like, that's like the penultimate for me. It's so good.
All right. Nice. I would go with, my mom used to make this penne alla vodka with chicken. It was so unbelievable. And the funniest thing about it is I never saw her cooking it. But right before it was ready every night, I saw her picking up a bag outside the front door.
That's fucked up, man.
She didn't cook. She didn't cook. Scrambled eggs.
Nothing beats a good plate of scrambled eggs.
All right, let's move on to the next question. Here we have a sports one. Mikey, ears up. Connor wants to know, should the Bills sell the farm and go for a top three wide receiver in the draft?
What spot are they picking in? They're picking so low. I mean, what are they?
Well, I think he's saying, should they sell the farm to trade for a higher
pick?
No,
I know that, but I still would want to know where exactly. They're in the mid-20s, I would imagine.
Yeah, 23.
I want to know exactly where. So they're at pick. They're at pick number 28.
Oh, my
for God. Them to get a top three wide receiver. So he's referring to obviously Malik Nabers. He's referring to Marvin Harrison Jr. or Rome Odunze. For them to be able to move up to where they're going to have to move up, which is the top 10 of this draft, to get that receiver from 28 to 10. I'll put it into perspective. The Bears moved from, I want to say, when they traded with the Giants to get Justin Fields, the Bears traded, I got to say,
Stephon Diggs a little later before the draft.
I just want to get the pick right because I want to give perspective on it. Okay. The Bears moved from 20 to 11 to get Justin Fields, 20 to 11. And it cost them a future first round pick the next year.
God.
Okay. For them to move 28 to 10 or 9 or 8, because you figure the Bears are going to land. The consensus kind of out of Chicago is that the Bears are going to go after whichever third receiver is left. Adunze, Neighbors, Harrison, I think it'll be Adunze. But either way, they're picking at 9. For them to get into the top 9 from 28, you're talking about minimally start of the conversation, 2 future first-rounders, and pick 28. So you're going to give up 28, a 25 first-rounder, a 26 first-rounder, and that might not even be enough to get it done. To move all the way up, because that's an unprecedented jump. Should they do that? No. No. The simple answer is no. They need to draft well. This is a wide receiver heavy draft. There's plenty of other good wideouts out there. They're not the top tier blue chip wideouts, but they cannot mortgage the farm for a wide receiver.
Junior from LSU is pretty damn good too.
There's plenty of guys. Maybe they could go up to the middle of the draft, but to land what I think the question specifically ticket top was the three. Top three.
Yeah.
That's why to me, the answer has to be no. It's just going to cost you way too much. It's going to cost you way too much to move there. So I would say stay where you are and move up maybe 10 spots or 12 spots, but to move 18, 19, 20 spots up. No, it's going to cost way too much. Way too much. You can't mortgage the future like that. If it was a quarterback, maybe I could justify it. For a wide receiver, I can't. So I would say no. I would say no.
There's not a lot left on that farm other than pet draft picks either. I mean, they're starting to lose some players, man.
Listen, I said last year before the season started, right, Tick? I think maybe you remember, maybe you don't. I said I thought that the Bills window was closing last year. I said by last year, I mean, beginning of last season, I thought that the Bills were kind of on a decline. Now they started off the year, not well. Then Josh did what Josh does in the second half of the year. He elevated them to the heights that they could reach. But now again, I'm looking at the Bills and I'm just like, yes, Allen could win them a game just because he's that good. He could win games for them. But the Bills aren't a team I look at and like they're so much better than other teams in the AFC. I don't look at them that way. So to me, the Bills need to draft very well, stay grounded, and start building that team back up through the draft. And the quickest way to fucking fizzle that out is shooting your load on a top three wide receiver and jumping all the way up and then mortgaging off your next 2 years of future number one first round draft picks. I just think it would be very short-sighted. I don't think the Bills are an elite wide receiver away from winning the Super Bowl. I just don't.
Yeah,
I don't. I think they need a lot of help. I think they need more help.
Well, Kincaid's going to be great for them this year.
He's going to be great. He's fantastic. And Knox is good. They could run a double tight all they want, and that's fine, well, and dandy. But, man, oh man, I understand why this kid's asking that question, though. Because they don't have anybody. They have Shakir, right? They got rid of Diggs. They got rid of Gabe Davis.
Gabe Davis, yeah.
So it's like, yeah, they're sitting in an awkward position. They definitely need wide receiver. But again, just be patient because this draft has really good receivers. It's just that everyone is infatuated with those three blue chip guys up top. But there's other guys that could be really good.
Yeah, there's a ton of them. And there's always those guys that are drafted low and they're not part of the top three.
That's why I'm saying do your homework.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I mean, was Stephon Diggs a high draft pick? I don't know. Wasn't he like a second round guy?
Yeah, I don't know what round he was in, but he was not a top ten guy.
Yeah, you can steal these guys, especially in a year like this one. So, all right, guys, I think that's it for viewer questions. That's about an hour and a half episode. I think we can move on here and shut down the episode. Another good one, guys. Joey D as always, Mikey V as always. Like, comment, subscribe. Send the questions to the Instagram and he will kick them back to us. We'll answer them at the end of each episode. But until then, we will see you guys next week.